Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Kuf Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to Option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins two lines from the bottom of Daf Kuf Aleph Omid Beis. At the end of our previous shiur, we gave a substantial introduction to today's shiur. So all we have to say, just to repeat, just to get into it a little bit more, is that we have a machlokis, Reb Yochanan and Reish Lakish, concerning someone who wrote on a piece of paper, on a shtar, Chayav ani l'chamona, I am obligated to pay you $100, and it seems from the Rashi that he gave this shtar over to the party, to the receiver, in the presence of witnesses. We saw Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish arguing, does that bind the person to pay? Is he obligated to pay simply because he wrote, I am obligated to pay you? So in order to evaluate this, we will see geometric forms. Specifically the trapezoid that you see two lines from the bottom appearing in alternating directions. This is a ma'akav. We indicate this on the side under our mivneh heading. The first appearance of the volcano shape is a question on Reish Lakish. When it is inverted, it becomes a response. And we'll continue back and forth this way, and then we'll have to evaluate where do we stand at the end of this give and take. The Gemara, two lines from the bottom, in the middle of the line, Tanan, Hanoise eso isha, uposka imoy lozun es bito chomesh shanim. We saw this in our Mishnah. A man marries a woman that has a daughter from a previous marriage, and this second husband establishes, he agrees, he commits himself to support the girl, the daughter, for 5 years. Chayav lozuna chomesh shanim. He is obligated. My love, ki hai gavna. Is it not so that the obligation was in the above mentioned fashion, where he wrote, I obligate myself to support your daughter for 5 years, and it says here that that obligates him. Well, that would be a challenge to Reish Lakish. We continue now at the top of Kuf Beis Omid Aleph. You can see the inverted volcano. This is a response. Lo. That's not what the story, what the case is talking about, but rather it's talking about something else. Bishtore psikta uchidarav gidol. Rashi at the top, lo bishtore psikta hechosin v'kala poiskim tenoim v'shebeneim. The couple, when they get married, they establish conditions between them. Bishnei edim, with two witnesses present. For edim choismin edus gemura. And the witnesses sign their agreement as full-fledged witnesses. The imtomar imkein my lememra. If that's the case, so why do we even have to mention that that obligates someone? Answer: itzterich. I need to be told this. Kevon kegon deleko kinyan ela dvorim. There isn't any formal gesture of clinching a deal. Leko kinyan. That means there's no... The standard form of kinyan, when you see kinyan mentioned throughout the Shas, without any additional description, it's the kinyan sudar, an exchange of a piece of cloth, a handkerchief, and that is a gesture that formally clinches deals. So that is what is lacking over here with regard to the shtari psikta. All there is are these words, the Ashmin and Kidrav Gidol, the Loboy Kinyan. And the point of our Mishnah when saying Chayav Lazuna is basically saying that he is obligated even without the formal Kinyan. But the difference between this, the Shtari Psikta, and the example of Chayav Ani Lecha Mona that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish were arguing about is that in the in the shtar that they that the fellow writes, he who wants to obligate himself, he doesn't have witnesses that sign in the document itself. So now our Gemara continues a little more about Rav Gittel. The Gemara on Omid Beis will deal more with Rav Gittel. In the meantime, the Omar Rav Gittel Omarav, Kamo Ato Noisein LeBincha, you have the fathers of the bride and groom discussing with one another. The father of the bride says, how much are you giving toward your son's marriage? And the fellow answers, kach v'kach, and he cites an amount. V'kama ato nosin levitcha, and the father of the bride is asked, how much are you giving toward your daughter's marriage? And he says, kach v'kach. Omdu v'kitshu konu, when the couple marries, when the groom offers the bride money in exchange for her agreeing to marriage, that also obligates the parents to provide that which they said. Hein hein hadvarim haniknim b'amira. These are things that these agreements, these obligations that the parents accept on themselves, are acquired through speech. In other words, they spoke about it. Rashi went a little further, and that they have witnesses that signed that they heard these things said. These obligations were recorded by witnesses who heard it, but there was no deal, there was no, kinyan, no act of deal clinching. Toshma. So we continue with our analysis, and here again a question is presented. Kosav Lekayen, a father of a firstborn, and I'm sure many of you know about the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen, a person's a firstborn a child of a mother needs to be redeemed. So if it's her firstborn, so the father offers 5 pieces of silver to a Kohen, which is the obligation and the fulfillment of Pidyon HaBen. So Kosav LeKohen, a man, a father of a firstborn, writes to a Kohen, She'ani chayev l'cho chamesh shloim. He writes that I am obligated to pay you 5 pieces of silver. Chayev litein lo chamesh shloim uvno eino podui. Now, let's focus on the main point right now. That's which we dashed underline. The father says, I am bound, and the ruling here is, we squiggle underline the key word, chayav, it binds him. So this is a question on Reish Lakish. The Gemara responds, shiny hossam, that case is different. The mishubad le midoraisa, you're dealing with a father who needs to redeem his firstborn son, and the father is bound, is, we'll say pre-bound, he's obligated to redeem the son. He's obligated to pay out the 5 selah, the 5 pieces of silver, regardless of his accepting upon himself the obligation or not. And that's quite different than a person who just pops out of the blue and says, I am chayef to pay you chayef to pay you $100. There's, in that case, there's no pre-existing Torah obligation. The Gemara said, well, ihachi, amai kosav, if he's obligated anyway, so what was the point in writing this to the Kohen? Answer, kedei levarer lo Kohen. His point in writing it was that I'm going to pay you the 5 selah to the exclusion of all other Kohanim. Well, ihachi, if it's so effective in binding him, then abeno amai eno podui. Why is the son, this firstborn, why is he not redeemed? The source said that he's chayav to pay, but at the end of the source says that beno eino podui, that he's not redeemed. Why? What's lacking now? The Gemara says kideula. You know, in order to understand why beno eino podui, let's understand Ula's teaching. The Amar Ula, Devar Torah podui lechashiitain. From a strictly Torah level, the child will be redeemed when he pays the 5 selah. The question is, umaitaima omru beno eino podui. So why does the source say that the payment of the 5 selah after he had written this obligation and he pays the 5 selah, why does it say in the source that he's not redeemed? The Gemara answers, it's a rabbinic restriction. Gezeira shema yoimru poidin b'shtoros. We're afraid that if people see this written obligation and payment thereof of the five selah, people think that in general you can redeem through shtar exchange. And what do we mean by that? The shtoros referred to here is a debt of collection, a written bill of collection, where let us say the father of this child, let us say he had loaned money to some outsider. So that and the outsider gave the father a shtar, an IOU, a written IOU. The Torah prohibits using that instrument of money collection as a means of redeeming a child. I say the Torah prevents it, forbids it. That's based on what we call gzeiros hakosuf. You can't use certain things for redeeming a child. You can't offer a slave. You can't offer a piece of ground, even though those things might be valuable. And you can't offer a shtar. So if now that's the shtar that I just mentioned, the IOU, a bill of collection from someone else. So if we would allow this, what was described above, to be an effective pidyon, people will think, oh, I saw the father give Kohen a writ of obligation. What difference does it make if it's the father obligating himself or it's a bill of collection that one has to collect from someone else? So in that type of bill of collection, as I say, to collect from someone else, that's not allowed from the Torah. So we say that people, if we allow the above to work as a pidyon haben, people will confuse things and think that all kinds of shtoros are effective when that's not true. Omar Rava Ketanoi. The issue is a machlokes tanoim. That means the machlokes between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan is a Tanaic controversy. And you'll see that this is in a sense it's a type of suggestion, because the Gemara at the bottom line is going to say that really it's not a machlokas tanoim. What's interesting structurally, oftentimes the Gemara would say lemo ketanoi. Can we say that this is a machlokas tanoim? But it seems by the end of this sugya that it's not. So that having been said, we're calling this a long marking. It's Rava's statement. So that Reish Lakish says, Chayav ani litein loch, that does not bind someone. And Reb Yochanan, who says that it does bind someone, would seem to be a machlokas tanoim. Up till this point, let me just point out, with regard to the back and forth style of Gemara, we had raised questions against Reish Lakish, but the final volcano shape you see is inverted, meaning Reish Lakish is able to provide an answer to defend his position. So now Rava continues, Orev hayotze achar chitum shtoros. And Orev is a guarantor of a loan. So a loan took place between Mr. A and Mr. B. A loaned B money, and B writes a document, an IOU, and witnesses sign the document. And lo and behold, after the witnesses signed the document, a guarantor signs on that if B, who borrowed the money, defaults, I will pay Mr. A. That's an orev. Hayotzi achar chitum shtoros means his name appears, his signature appears under the witnesses. Goive only minachosa b'nei chorin. If the borrower defaults, so then Mr. A, who's trying to collect from Mr. B, Mr. A will collect from the guarantor, but only from properties that he is currently holding onto, not to properties that he may have sold after the loan had taken place. Ma'ase ba'al lifnei Rabbi Shmuel v'yomar goyve minechosem b'nei chorin. that the Orev is able to collect. And then we dashed underline Gove, bearing in mind that we have a Machlokas, Rav, and Shmuel, and we want to parallel Tanaic approaches. So here you see the Orev by signing his name, even though the witnesses aren't signed regarding his Arvus, regarding his guarantor status. Nevertheless, he is bound to pay the loan if the borrower defaults. Omar lo ben Nanos. Ben Nanos disagrees with Rabbi Shmuel. Says Eino gove lo minichosim ben echorin v'lo minichosim mishubadim. The lender cannot pursue the guarantor not from properties he's currently holding on to, the Bnei Chorin, and certainly not Mishubadim, properties that he may have sold after the loan. Omar lo lama. So Rabbi Shmuel asks Ben Nanos, why not? Why is he not obligated? Omar lo, Ben Nanos answers, imagine the following story. Hareisho yochinik es chavero bashuk. Umotso chavero v'yomar lo, hanoch lo v'ani etein loch. Two parties are fighting. One guy is seen strangling the other party, and the guy is turning blue. And some passerby says, "Oh, leave him be, and I'll pay you money." Potter. The passerby isn't obligated to pay the strangler money. Shelo al emunoso hilveu. The loan was never extended based on this passerby's based on reliance upon this passerby. Now, when we look at this case of the strangler had a debt to collect from some guy that apparently didn't want to pay up the money. And in the course of the borrower turning blue, some passerby says, "Don't worry, I'll leave him be. I'll pay his debt." He is not obligated as an orev, as a guarantor, as the source ends by saying, "Shelo al emunos elveu." The loan, the giving of the money as a loan, was not done so with reliance upon this passerby. Likewise, with regard to our case of the Orev Hayotzei Achachitum Shtoros, Ben Nano says, the loan was created, was extended before the guarantor signed on. So the fact that he signs on afterwards, very nice, but that doesn't bind him whatsoever. Just like the passerby is not bound in his offer to pay off the loan to spare the borrower of dying. At this point, then Lema Rabbi Yochanan de Omar ke Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yochanan, who at the bottom of Kuf Aleph Amid Beis said that when you write Chayev Ani Litein Loch, you are bound. That would be like Rabbi Shmuel, who says that this Orev is bound to pay, albeit from his own holdings, but he is bound. And Reish Lakish, who exempts in the Chayev Ani Litein Loch, goes like the Omar Keben Nanos. The Gemara continues and says, Aliba de Ben Nanos Kule Amalo Pligi. That means that Rabbi Yochanan, by saying that Rabbi Yochanan goes like Rabbi Shmuel, that's, of course, he doesn't attempt to say his opinion within Ben Nanos. Rabbi Yochanan concedes that Ben Nanos would exempt. Mind you, in the case of Arvus being a guarantor is a concept that has a Torah basis. Rashi gives you the sources for that. And yet, Ben Nano says that if there are no witnesses that are signing after the Arvus, after the Orev signs, he is exempt All the more so where someone simply writes, Chayav ani tein, ani, Chayav ani l'cha amana, I am obligating myself to pay you $100, where there isn't any, let's see, Torah basis for that obligation, certainly Ben Anas will exempt. So within Ben Anas, you don't find Rabbi Yochanan trying to express his opinion. The Gemara continues at the top of Amud Beis. Ki pligi aliva de Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi, that's Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan argue within the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yochanan, ki Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yochanan who says, Chayav ani tein, ani li tein loch mona, obligates you. That's like Rabbi Yishmael said that the Orev who signed on after the witnesses had signed, he is also bound. The Reish Lakish Ad Kan Lokoma Rabbi Yishmael, Reish Lakish tells you that though Rabbi Yishmael says that the Orev is Chayav, that the guarantor is obligated to pay up the loan in the case of default, there Hassam, Rabbi Yishmael says his halacha there, this idea of being obligated there in the case of Orev, Ela Deshayach Le Vishibuda Deraisa, there's a Torah-based precedent for serving as an Orev. Since there's a Torah-based precedent for that, when you sign, when you indicate that you will be an Orev, so Rabbi Shmuel will say, there, you're obligated. Aval Hacha, in the case of someone who pops out of the blue and writes, Chayav Ani Litein Loch Mana, Lo Shayach Shibuda Doraisa. There isn't any element of being bound to pay on a Torah level. Therefore, even Rabbi Shmuel will concede to what I am saying in the Chayav Ani Litein Loch Mana case that you are not obligated. And as we mentioned earlier, we would come back to Rav Gidol Amarav, and here the Gemara comes back to that. We have arrows to the side of the Gemara indicating where you can find on Omid Aleph where he was mentioned. So here we focus on that. And before we go into the Gemara itself, we glance at the side where we have a Nosei topic heading. Dino Shel Rav Gidol Amarav. We're focusing on his teaching. His Chayvus Horei Choson Vekala, the obligation that parents of bride and of groom and bride make loses kesef lezug ayde amira, through their verbal expression they become bound to provide that which they said they would, believe kinyan, without making a formal gesture. And we point out heora nearly al pi hemshech hagemora tadino shirav gidol kolel gam shar suges chayvus shoisim likras anisum kamo kamo yitain lozunes bita. Seems that this obligation covers other aspects of offerings in anticipation of the wedding, like the case that we saw, how much will you, regarding a woman who marries a second husband, bringing into the new marriage a daughter and the stepfather promising to support the girl. Now the Gemara. Gufa, Amar Rav Gidol Amar Rav. Kamo ato noisein lebincha. And he answers kach v'kach. V'kama ato noisein lebitcha, and they answer kach v'kach. Omdu v'kitshu, when the couple does the act of marriage, kanu, that obligates the parents who committed themselves to providing each one the amount that they said. Hein hein hadvorim aniknim b'amira. These are things that one is bound to through speech. In other words, there was no kinyan done on the respective obligations, but rather we say that in exchange or for the satisfaction that the parents have in their children getting married, that is the act that obligates them. Omar Rava Mistabra Milsa Darav Bebitoi Nara De Komoti Hano Liode. Rava says that it's most likely that Rav's din, that there's obligation, is when a parent is marrying off the daughter who's a Nara. This is a girl who is of age where she her income would go to the father. Where the money that's paid for her kiddushin, for her marriage, is given to the father. Avol boigeres, but a girl above 12 and a half, a nara is up till age 12 and a half. But a bogeris from 12 and a half on, the lo moti hanoli yodei, where the father is not given the money, the girl keeps the money, she receives the money, lo, so then the father, he might have said things about what he's going to give toward her marriage, but he wouldn't be obligated. Well, that's what it seems through Rava's eyes. V'elokim, that word is a type of oath, a swearing, something for emphasis. Omar Rav, but in truth, Rav said Afilu Bogeris, where a father is marrying off the Bogeris daughter, where he doesn't get the Kesef Kiddushin, nevertheless the father is bound. The E Lo Tema Ochi, if you don't subscribe to this analysis, but you base it on what we said before, Avi HaBen Mayano Osu LiYodei, when we speak about the parent receiving benefit, that what does the father of the groom get? He doesn't get anything. The groom is paying out the money to the girl. There's no money paid to him. So Ella, and yet we say that the father of the groom is bound. Ella Bayano Dichko Mechatni Ahadodi, and this is what we explained earlier. It's in exchange or as a result of the pleasure, the satisfaction that parents have that their children are getting married. Gamri Umatni Lahadodi. They respectively bind themselves to one another. The Gemara, as it goes on, introduces a subtopic, and we have on the side a tatnose, L'Ravashi lo nitan lichtov hischaivus hanal b'shtar im edim. According to Rav Ashi, the hischaivus, the obligations that the parents make, is not something that can be unless they order otherwise, but you cannot automatically record that in a document and have witnesses sign on it. Omarle Ravina the Ravashi. Ravina asks, Dvorim Halolu, the obligations of the parents, they call that Rav Gittel's teaching above, Nitnu li kosev alo nitnu li kosev, can they be written down? Rashi on the second narrow line says Nitnu likosev nosnu chachom ksiva ledover ladover imbo lahachtim edim bedvarim halolo shein below kinyan. Can these obligations that they made to one another without a kinyan? Now there is a concept you find elsewhere, stam kinyan ksiva omeid, that where you see a transaction with a gesture, so that can be recorded. But here we don't have a kinyan. So can the respective obligations be recorded and have witnesses sign on it? So that's Ravino's question. Omar le lo nitnu li kosev. Ravashi answers, no, they cannot be written down. Because if you would have these obligations written down and witnesses signed on that, that would enable one party to collect not only from the other party's current holdings, but even from properties that he may have sold, that he sold after the wedding, after the children's wedding. And the halacha is that since there was no kinyan, so the purchasers are not bound. There's no lien on the properties. So we're afraid that if you would have the obligations recorded in a document with witnesses signing on, that would enable either father of the groom or father of the bride to collect from the other ones nechosim mishubadim. You can see we have triangles, and on the side, under the Mivneh heading, we introduce this as Gimel Kushya's three questions al Ravashi mimukos from various Tanaic sources. Esvei. We saw this at the end of our Mishnah. Hapikin hayu kaisvin, the wise subsequent husbands, when marrying a woman that comes into the marriage with a daughter, so as to limit the obligation and not have it extend to after their death or to a subsequent marriage, they would write as follows. They would kaisvin. Almanas she'ozun es bitcho chomesh shanim kozman she'at imi. Now, we pointed out earlier that this is in the realm of things that a man obligates himself prior to the marriage, coming under the the heading of Rav Gidol Amarav. We made reference to this in our No Say Our topic heading before. So, what do we see? We see that this man's obligating himself to support the daughter is something that can be recorded. The Gemara says that's not what it's saying. My kaisvin oimrim. The word kaisvin doesn't mean have it written down. It means they speak. They say it verbally. The Gemara asks, v'kari le'lamir oksiva, is there precedent for speech being referred to by the term ksiva? Well, it says in v'hatanan, yes, and I will show you. Ha'kaisev lishto dinu dvorim ein li b'nechosayach, v'toni Rabbi Chiya ha'oimer lishto. We have a Mishnah that says, a man that is claiming that he will have no claims on his wife's properties. Without getting, of course, we learned these, this is part of the mission and the sugya earlier in the Masechta, but we want to focus on the kosev aspect. We see the Mishnah using the word kosev, and Rabbi Chiya, who's an author of Brises that expound on the Mishnah, uses the word ha'omer, so which indicates to us that the Mishnah that used the word HaKosev really means it was a verbal declaration where he says, I remove myself from claims on your properties. Toshma. Ein Kosevin Shtore Erusin Unisuin Elo Midas Shnehem. We don't write, and here we're not going to be able to translate, because the Gemara wants to make a certain assumption about this word, shtore, erus nisuin. We don't write these documents associated with marriage, unless they both agree. Ha midas shneim kaisvin. But if they both agree, so then it can be written down. My love, what are we talking about in this source? Shtore psikta. We're talking about those very documents that Rav Gidol Amarav spoke, the very issue of Rav Gidol Amarav, and you see from here that it's able to be recorded, and that's not like Rav Ashi's ruling. Rav Ashi did not want them recorded because there was no kinyan, and if you record them in a shtar, that will enable either party that doesn't pay up to seize upon his shubadim properties that he sold afterwards. Lo, so the Gemara says that the source that we just saw, where we inferred that midash nam kaisvin, that's shtori erusin mamish kidrav papa v'rav shravya. That has to do with the document that enables, that creates the marriage itself. We know that Isha Niknes B'Shloisha Drachim B'Kesa B'Shtar B'Biyah, one of the means of acquiring a woman is by writing a shtar in which you say, Hare At Mekudeshes Li, you're married to me through this shtar. And with that, with the woman taking the shtar, she becomes married. So, that kind of shtar, if they both agree, the husband and the wife, so it can be written. It is then written, and that is in accordance with Rav Papa. Now we'll have to see what do Rav Papa and Rav Shravya say. The itmar kosvu lishma v'shalom idaita a shtar erusin. Was written with the bride in mind, but without her knowledge. In other words, you had intention. Lishma means you have the proper intention, namely with her in mind. This concept of lishma you find in other areas of writing. Maybe the most famous is dealing with the case of a get. Here, we're dealing with a marriage document. So, if you wrote it with her in mind, but not with her knowledge, Rabba v'Ravino Amri Mikudeshes, they say it's effective. Rav Papa v'Rav Shravya, we dashed underline because this is really what we were leading up to. They say Amri. They both say Eino Mikudeshes, because in writing a shtar erusin, you have to not only write it with her in mind, but with her knowledge of it being written. And that's what the source indicated before, that you don't write the shtari erusin elo midas shneim, unless both are aware of it being written, meaning the woman as well. Toshma, we continue analyzing the issue of the shtari psikta. Can they be written down? Can the obligations that the father, the fathers of the bride and groom write, can they be written down with witnesses signing to that effect? Toshma, number three. Also a quote from the Mishnah. Mesu, the husbands that had obligated themselves to support the daughter of the wife that they married, Benosehen Nizonus Minachosim Bnei Chorin, their own daughters will be supported, but only from properties that they currently hold, as opposed to sold properties. Fehi nizoines minechosem mishubadim. The bas isha, the daughter of the woman that they had married, is supported from nechosem mishubadim, from properties that he may have sold to others, to purchasers. That they shehi kebalas chov. That daughter of the daughter of the wife that he had married is considered like a creditor, someone that has a bill of collection. So what do you see from here? You see that these things that people obligate themselves in anticipation of marriage can be written down. So that is a challenge to Rav Ashi's ruling, who had said above, "Lo nitnu likosev." If she can collect for her mazonos from purchasers, that would indicate that it was written down. The Gemara says, "Hocha b'may askinon b'shekonu miyodo." Yes, she's able to collect from Mishubadim, but not just because it was written down, but rather because there was a kinyan that was done. So because of the kinyan, that's what enables her to collect from the purchasers. But in the absence of a kinyan, obligations that people obligate themselves in anticipation of a marriage cannot be written down and signed by witnesses. And we explained earlier, because if that would happen, people would mistakenly go and collect from purchasers, when you can't do that if no kinyan had been made. Ihachi, and now we have a flurry, you can see, of back and forth discussion, and we try to keep track of this through our markings on the side under the Mivneh heading. The volcano shape is a ma'akav, with the narrow part facing up, that represents a tshuva al hakushi shikshu al Ravashi. This would represent a defense for Ravashi, and the inverted volcano are she'elos, represent problems, raising of questions. Matras hamakav, the purpose of this back and forth, is liroisim tshuvas Rav Ashi nishar ad asof. Does Rav Ashi's answer hold up till the end? So the Gemara asks, well, if you're going to say that a kinyan was made, then ihochi bonos nami, why not his own daughters as well? The Gemara says, "Bishikonu lezu velo konu lezu." The kinyan was made for the wife's daughter, but not for his own daughters. Oh my Pascha, what is so conclusive? What is so definitive that you can make this split? Is it something that is predetermined, that one makes a kinyan for his wife's daughter and not for his own daughters? The Gemara answers, "Ihi dehavoi b'shas kinyan mani lo kinyan." The bas ishto, she was already born at the time. We're dealing with a woman that came into the marriage with a daughter she had from a previous marriage. So that daughter was around at the time they made the kinyan. at the time they made that, the gesture that clinches deals, the exchange of the handkerchief. However, bonos stolohavu bishas kinyan lo mahanilu kinyan, his own daughters, they weren't born yet. So the kinyan that he makes doesn't cover them. The Gemara says, how can you say so definitively that one's own daughters weren't already born? Mi lo askinon, should we not take into consideration this as well, to havoi b'shas kinyan, that a man had his own daughters were already born at the time of the kinyan, v'hechi domin, how could that be? Kagon de garsha v'hadra. There had been a man married to a woman that happened to have a daughter from a previous marriage. They married now. She married her second husband, had their own daughters, then divorced her, then took her back, Ahadrazi took her back, and made a kinyan. And that kinyan then is dealing not only with his wife's daughter, but with his own daughters also. So why did you say that the kinyan covers the wife's daughter and not his own daughters? Elo, ihi, the lesa b'tanai beisdin, the bas ishto, the daughter of his wife, she's not covered by the tanai beisdin. Tanai beisdin says it's a court condition with regard to marriages. It's a rabbinic obligation, and that says that a man, when he marries a wife, he guarantees a support to his benos nukvin, the benon nukvin, to support his daughters. So that's regarding his own daughters, they are covered, they're provided for by the Tanai Beis Din. The daughter that his wife has, when she comes into the marriage with her daughter, she's not covered by the Tanai Beis Din. The Tanai Beis Din specifically refers to one's own daughters that he has with that particular woman that he's marrying. So, the bas ishto, the daughter of his wife, she's not covered by the tanai based in sumahani lo kinyan. The kinyan that he makes, guaranteeing the wife's daughter's support for 5 years, it's effective. His own daughters that are covered by the tanai based in lo mahani lo kinyan, the kinyan doesn't work. The Gemara asks, Mikra Gari, well, just because they're covered by a Tanai Beis Din, the kinyan that he makes, do they lose out? Gari means, are they less? Are they, because they have a Tanai Beis Din, that makes them less? Elo benoisov, hainu taimo, kevon di isnu b'Tanai Beis Din, regarding his own daughters, if you're going to ask, why are they not covered by the Tanai Beis Din? Well, why are they not covered by his kinyan? Why is it that it's not covered by his kinyan? Since they're covered by the Tanai Beis Din, Amar Tsrori Atvesinhu, that the father might very well have provided ahead of time money, sorry, literally wallets or pouches of money for their mazonos. Namely, before the father died, we are suspect that he entrusted with them money for their mazonos. Because of this, we'll call this heavy obligation on the father to provide mazonos to the daughters. Therefore, we are making the assumption that he already provided for them. Therefore, the daughters cannot collect their mizonos from purchasers. The purchasers are going to raise this specter of his having entrusted with them money ahead of time for their mizonos. But the wife's daughter, you know, this suspicion doesn't get off the ground, doesn't even begin. Therefore, she is like a balas chov. But we have to emphasize the main point is, because what enables her to collect from purchasers as a balas chov? Because a kinyan was made. But in the absence of a kinyan, these type of obligations that Rav Gidel Amar Rav spoke about, if a no kinyan was made, so these obligations cannot be recorded in writing and have witnesses sign on that. And we mentioned before, a couple of times already, that because that would lead to, we'll say, endangering subsequent purchasers to pay up those obligations. And then since no kinyan was made, they're not bound to begin with. Lo Yomar HaRishon, and this, quoting from the Mishnah, where a man had obligated himself to support his wife's daughter, and then we saw when that mother went ahead and married a second husband, i.e. second stepfather. As we said, it was her third husband, but it's the second stepfather. So the first stepfather can't say, "Oh, I'll honor my obligation only if she comes to me." Not so. He has to send the food to where the mother is. Assuming, of course, that, and that's the point here, that's where the daughter is. Omar of Chisda. Before we continue with the Gemara, let's just point out the topic heading, the Nosei Mokom Habas. The place of a daughter is Eitzel Imo, with her mother. Lo Shnok Tana v'lo Shnok Gdola. This idea of a daughter, who's a girl who's not married, to be with her mother, is regardless of whether she is a minor or even older. Omar Rav Chisda, Zois Oimeres, from that which our Mishnah says, Lamokom Shima, that first stepfather has to send the food to where the mother is, that shows us Bas Eitzel Ima, that a daughter, even a gedola, is where her mother is. And this is based on the idea that it's the mother's responsibility to raise the daughter. The Gemara asks a question. You'll see it lasts a few lines. Mimai de begedola skinan. Who says that the Mishnah is talking about a girl that's a gedola? She's above 12 years of age. Dilma biktano askinon. Maybe the Mishnah is dealing with a minor, and as far as the sending of the food to where the mother is, that's umishum mais shahoya. It's because of a terrible incident that took place that we have this insistence of the girl being with her mother, where her mother is. Disanya, the following source tells us, Mishemes v'niach ben koton limo, a man died leaving a child, a young son, Yorshe ho'av omrim yegodel etzlenu, the father's heirs, that might include like this child's older brothers. Those are the Yor She'av, the ones that inherit the father. Say, we want our little brother to be with us. The Imo Omeris, and the child's mother says, Yehei Bini Godel Etzli, I want my little boy to grow up with me, be in my custody. So you have what's like a child custody issue, not between two parents, the father is dead here, but between the father's heirs, could be the child's older brothers, and the mother on the other hand. So where does the child go? Menichen oisa etzelimo, this young boy will be by the mother. Ve'ein manichen oisa etzel ro'ui liorsha. We don't leave him by those that could potentially inherit him. In other words, if this Ben Cotton, he's an heir, he's part of a family that inherited property. In the event that particular Ben Cotton dies, there are people that would inherit from him. For example, his older brothers. We don't leave this child by those that could inherit from him. Maise hoya v'shachtu erev harishon. In fact, something happened like that. An incident of this nature happened where the little boy went with his older brothers, and they slaughtered him. They killed him. You see what money can do, and what it could drive people to do? It drove the older brothers to kill him so that he wouldn't be one that will reduce the amount that they get from the estate. So that, and in fact, they inherit him, each one of the older brothers, then getting more money, more value from the estate. So you see that the idea of a child being with the mother and not being with the Roy Liorsha with his brothers is a consideration of keeping the child, keeping a little kid who can't defend himself from being killed. So that's appropriate when you're dealing with a little kid, with a minor. But as far as a rule across the boards that all girls are to be with their mother, who says maybe, as we are suggesting now, maybe that is a rule with regard to a minor, and because of Maisa Shai, not because of a mother's obligation to raise the daughter. The Gemara says, in Cain, if it were so that there is a distinction, listening, the Mishnah should have said, with regard to that first stepfather and his sending the food to the former wife's daughter, it should have said he sent it lemokom shehi. Send it to wherever she is. If it's a minor, so it's with the mother. If it's an adult, not necessarily, she's not necessarily with the mother. She could be maybe with her brothers. The Gemara continues at the top of Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph. My lemokom she'ima. Why does the Mishnah say in an unqualified fashion that the mizonos, the food, is to be sent to where the mother is? Shamas mina. From here we conclude bas etzel ho'em. A daughter is to be by her mother. Lo shna gedola v'lo shna ketana. Whether, not making any distinction whether she's an adult daughter, meaning above 12 years of age, or a minor. The Gemara quotes from the Mishnah, Lo Yomru Shnehem, the two stepfathers that have obligated themselves cannot say that we'll support her as one, will together support her. But rather, the girl is entitled to two mizonos entitlements. One will be actual food, and the other will be cash, the value of the food. Before we continue with the Gemara text, let's glance at the side. We have a Nosei, a topic heading. Socher Sheshilem Schirus Ayadei Pu'ulois L'Toivas Balabayas. A person rented something, rented a tool, rented whatever. We're going to see in our Gemara, a person rented a grinder, a grindstone, a grind mill. He rented it from somebody. And the way he would pay for the rent was not through a monthly cash payment, but rather pay through services that the owner, who has a household, he has grinding needs. He has wheat on an ongoing basis that needs to be ground so they can make flour and eventually bake it. So the grinder is going to be rented by someone who will pay for the rental in services. Ha'im balabayas yochol lishanos tnai haschirus. Can the owner change the conditions of the rental, ulavakish tashlum kaspi, and to demand a cash payment, ekiv matziv chadash, because of new circumstances, because of certain circumstances that changed in the course of the rental, can there be a change in terms of how the rental is paid? And the changed circumstances are such shekvar einot tzorich lepulos asocher. He doesn't need those services anymore. He was willing to accept rental payment in service because the owner needed the services. But a certain situation can arise. He doesn't need those services anymore. So what's going to be? Can he demand a cash payment for the rental? The Gemara. Three lines from the top of Kuf Gimel Omer Aleph, Hahu Gavra, the Oigar Le Rechaya Le Chavre Litrina. There was a man that rented a grinder to his friend for grinding purposes. And you have to speak out, we wrote in between the lines. The agreement was that the renter is not going to pay a cash rental payment, but he will pay in services that on an ongoing basis, this renter will grind the balabayas's, the owner's wheat for him. Lesofi aser, in the course of time, the owner of the grinder literally became wealthy. It means he came into some money, and you know what he did with the money? Zovin rechayel v'chamra. He bought a grindstone, another grindstone, with a donkey that will operate the grindstone. So now he has, we'll say, he has an automatic grindstone providing for his own grinding needs. He doesn't need the renter's services. But on the other hand, he has a rental fee that he expects to receive. Omar Lay, the owner says, Adu idno have tachinino gaboch, up till now my grinding needs were taken care of by you. Hashta, now that I have a new automatic grinder, I don't need your services. Havli agro, I want you to pay me a cash rental fee. Omar Lay, the renter says, Mitchan tachinino loch. I'm not paying you cash. I am going to continue paying you with in services. Sovar Ravina Lemeimar. Ravina, upon hearing this argument between the owner and the renter, said, Hainu Masnisen, this controversy is dealt with by our Mishnah. What did it say in our Mishnah? In our Mishnah, we had two stepfathers. And we were taught in the Mishnah, Lo Yomru Shnehem, Hare Onu Zonin Oiso Keachod. They cannot join together and say, between the two of us, we're going to provide you with one portion. Elo Echod Zono, Vi Echod Noisein Lo Demei Mizonos. One of the stepfathers will continue to provide the wife's daughter with food, and the other will give her the value of her food. The girl, she doesn't need two portions of food. So, and yet we know that both stepfathers were individually obligated. So what do we do when someone doesn't need something? The extra portion. So cash is given instead. Here you have an owner. He doesn't need two quantities ground. He has his own house needs. It's one quantity. He doesn't need two quantities ground. So he can also demand from the renter, I don't need your grinding. You give me cash. So this is what Ravina wanted to rule, that against the renter. Omer le Rav Avira mi domi. Rav Avira challenges Ravina and says, how can you compare these cases? They're not comparable. Hossam, in the case of the girl and the mizonos payment, chad kreso is law, tarti kresto less law. She's got one stomach, she doesn't have two stomachs. In other words, there's the idea of providing her with two portions of food is ridiculous. There's logic tells you that one portion of actual food and the other portion, the other obligation, in cash terms. Ha-ha, though here, why do you rule against the renter? Motzi Omarle, the socher, the renter could say, yes, I know you have an automatic grinder. Tchon v'zovin, tchon v'yosef. Listen, use your automatic grinder to grind wheat and sell flour to others, and I will continue grinding for your personal needs, and I can continue paying in services. So that's Rav Avira's response on behalf of the renter. V'lo amoron ela the less lay tchino l'rechaya. The ruling of Ravina that the renter does not have to pay in cash, but can pay in services. That is only assuming that that renter doesn't have other people's grains to grind. Avol is lei tchino lerechaya. If he's a busy guy, he's got other people's grains to grind. And, of course, in grinding other people's grains, he'll get paid for that. Kegon zu, kaifen oisal midas dom. In a case like this, we will tell the grinder, listen, you're making money from grinding other people's grains. Grind, you'll get paid for grinding other people's grains. And now, with that money that you got, pay the renter pay the renter his rental fee. And this is an example where we will force someone to behave accordingly. This is called ze nehene veze lo choser. Let the owner of the grinder benefit from the cash payment, and the grinder isn't losing out. He has a way of making money. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Elo de les le tchino lerechaya. Rav Avira's ruling favoring the renter was she'ein socher motze litchon bischar kol shah, where the renter doesn't have any means of income. He doesn't have customers that require grinding in exchange for pay. Lefikach omer lo. Therefore, the renter says ani yoshev botel. I have nothing to do. And from Rashi, I get the impression I have nothing to do and I have no income. So, etchon loch v'lo etein domim. I therefore will grind for you and not pay you. Rashi continues, avol kol zman shemotzi litchon toichin b'schar v'nosin lozeh domim. But if you have a situation that he has regular customers that need grinding and the renter will be paid for his services that he renders to others, let him grind for others for pay and give a cash rental payment to the owner. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Mark Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.